You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show, and it's time to talk GAA with presenter of the DL Debate, Brendan Devenny. Brendan, how are you getting on? Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. Good to see you.
Good to have you with us. And what a weekend it was. Niamh Connell, the new champions, the Donegal Senior Football Champions. The final scoreline, 218 to 119, obviously, as it never does, doesn't tell the full story of the game.
Yeah, listen, Greg, it was a brilliant day at the park. You know, it was good or you've gone in the two games, and the Senior B as well went the extra time. It was a brilliant curtain raiser in terms of setting the scene for the final. It was a half an hour put back then in terms of fitting everything in, because you've got the Ardra, which was the 25-year champions. And listen, it was a glorious day at the park at this time of year, particularly after last week's washout and the intermediate. So yeah, listen, the best two teams in the county playing, Greg, for sure. You know, coming in there in different kind of form. You know, Niamh Connell maybe hadn't played their best football all season, but they won when they needed to, and they come played really well late on in games. And I wouldn't even say come back from the dead, but they certainly looked like they were going out against Termon. They were 3 points down and added time, an extra time against Four Masters, but they kept digging out results. And this game went something similar, a pattern. I didn't expect how quickly they came back at Gidoor. They were 7 points down at half time. Gidoor were pretty much good value for that lead, but you knew that they were going to come after Gidoor. But the way that they did in that second half, Greg, was unbelievable. And from that second half period into the first period of extra time, they completely annihilated Gidoor in kickouts and in scoring. I was making notes here about the amount it was 2-9 to 3 points in that period, Greg, of the half in the first period of extra time. So for a game to be, people couldn't decide who was going to come out on top, for it to swing so much in scoring, you know, was something that we hadn't really predicted. But I think all in all, maybe Gidoor, you would say, in normal time, had a few opportunities to maybe seal the game, to go three up again. They didn't take them, and you just felt like there was going to be a moment of magic coming, you know, when it came from Max Campbell, it came from Shane Malone, a brilliant two-pointer to level up the tie.
Some and pressure on that kick, wasn't there? When
listen, it was outside the boot, it just curled inside the post, Greg. But you know the way in a game like that, when a team misses a couple of easy chances and the Gidoor lads know that they should have went to three up, and then it had to be a goal. The fact that they left a 2 point sitting, you just thought, here it comes. And in fairness to Shane Malone, it was a brilliant strike. And then kickouts was the big thing, Greg. In that period, I was saying, where Niamh Connell scored Gidoor 2-9-3, they absolutely destroyed them on kickouts. Obviously, the majority of Gidoor's own kickouts, there was a few of their own as well. But, you know, I think in about 16 kickouts, Gidoor might have won three of them. So, you know, you look at that, it was amazing that Gidoor hung in the game. And yet, even though in added time, when Niamh Connell went so far ahead, Gidoor still managed to pull back a couple of brilliant two-pointers from Ethan Harkin. And then there was that late opportunity to actually tie the game for Gidoor.
Just out of range, and that was just the way it was.
Both teams showed a lot of guts, Greg. Yeah. You know, whenever Niamh Connell took over in that match, you know, you were thinking, really, you know, at 2-16 to 1-13 in the first period of added time, it was game over. It was 6 points. Niamh Connell were totally on top. So the fact that Gidoor dug deep and pulled back in, you'd have to say fair play to them. Came within a kick of the ball of the game. So, as I say, definitely the best two teams in the county. It was a brilliant match. Great to see, and the new rules helping a lot.
Yeah, and listening to some of the commentary after the match, you kind of got the feeling at least some within the Niamh Connell squad thought the team had been overlooked, that, you know, all the conversation was about you know, a few other teams. And I wondered, did they use that sort of as an inspiration to go out and do the business?
Yeah, I was supposed to have lost a couple of games in the lead up to it in the group, you see, Greg. So the fact that Termon were so far ahead of them in the closing stretch, a lot of people were saying they were hanging in there. But I just thought they were very dangerous coming into it, because if they hadn't played their best and they were still in the final, the fact that they had so much experience in finals, you know, they've been in the majority of finals this last 10 years. They've been there or thereabouts. I think there might have been 7 or 8 of them. So there was a lot of experience in there, even missing a couple of the players. Kieran Thompson, obviously, was a big loss when going into the game. But you just knew, particularly with some of the new breed they had in there, and you'd have to say, obviously, Finbar Roddy, man of the match, you know, Shane Malone and Max Campbell, the protectors, added a lot to him. Big Kevin Gallagher playing at midfield has been superb. So there's been some, listen, right across the board, there'll be some brilliant performances from them. Listen, they come down to a kick of a ball again, but Niamh Connell, as they've needed to do throughout this season, it's them that's came out the right side.
Yeah, and it's right too. You get a competition like this and you get to the last two, it's the percentages, isn't it, that are the big, just those small percentages. And as you mentioned right at the top two, it's the double two, Niamh Connell beaten Gweedore in the Senior B Championship final. So a lot of celebration in Glenties and surrounds, no doubt about that. What are you doing with the show tonight?
Yeah, heading down there. We're heading to the Thatch Bar. We're going to broadcast. Listen, we said last week that we would head to whoever won the final to do a bit of live show and to get a bit of reaction. And John Galdea's coming down with me. Brendan Kilcoyne's coming as well. And we're going to, say, pull in a few, I suppose, club officials and a few past players and a few players that played yesterday, providing they're in good shape and their voice is still there. I was having the crack. I was giving the crack with John O'Malley. You see, he says, because Brendan McMahon to be Brendan McDyer, and his voice was going already, and that was just after the match. So listen, we'll see who's in good shape down there, Greg, and we'll have a bit of crack with Niamh Connell. But listen, it's thoroughly deserved, and they'll be a good Donegal representative going into Ulster.
And the joy, you know, no matter what people go on to achieve for some in that squad, this will just be the best day of their lives. And the heartbreak for the Gweedore lads as well. It's sports wonderful and it's cruel. And it's all of that, isn't it? Just the joy and the devastation.
The heart, I suppose, Gweedore, I mean, 2 years ago, 2023 final, Gweedore getting it. It was Ronan McNeely's first year there. And, you know, they were well beaten by Niamh Connell. So you'd have to say in the 2 years previous that, you know, Niamh Connell are still always going to be strong. They're the team to beat in the bit at Donegal. So the fact that Gweedore have bridged that gap so considerably, you'd have to say, you know, when the dust settles, it was a huge effort. I mean, they were beaten the semi-final last year. That came down to a kick of the ball with St. Junan. So they've certainly bridged the gap. But yet and all, that bit of experience seemed to be telling on the day that Niamh Connell just seemed to be very comfortable in their own skin in tight games. And Greg, as I say, come out the right side. That was their eighth title.
Yeah, and everything adds to the spectacle. The park looked in great shape.
Yeah, listen, fantastic, Greg, obviously, yeah. And the junior final the day before, Cairn Donner, were beaten in last year's final, came through and bet later Kenny Giel. So a big victory for him. They had a 1-2 because they were playing in the junior B as well. So Cairn Donner won on that. So a good day for Cairn Donner. They beat St. Mary's Convoy. And the senior C championship went to McCool's. They beat St. Junan. So, yeah, all the honours been handed out now. Greg, a lot of celebrating to be done. So yeah, we're gonna join in a bit. I don't know if I'll be celebrating tonight though. So but I'll go down and we'll have the crack. You know?
Well, you didn't book the show into a community centre either, did you?
No, we didn't. No, that Oshin did that. There must be a wee kind of VIP area, and maybe it'll be cordoned off, and
maybe.
So hopefully people aren't up on the top of chairs, Greg. It might be hard.
Well, I don't know, it might make for good radio. It's in the Thatch Bar, right? And it's not closed, it's open. The show's live from the Thatch Bar in beautiful Glenties from just after the 7 o'clock news. Brendan's going to be there, of course, Brendan Kilcoyne, and a whole host of other guests, and there'll be a great turnout. I'm sure the people of Glenties and the people of Niamh Connell will be keen to get in there and have their say as well. All right, and that's it, of course, and a run through whatever else has happened over the weekend. As you mentioned, we didn't get to all of the games, but there was plenty of action, plenty of joy, plenty of heartbreak, and great spectacle. I thought yesterday's game was great.
Yeah, that's good. Exactly. You know, it was great to have the cameras there as well. I actually liked from the point of view of the cameras being stationed over the far side across the stand, because sometimes you see, you know, when you're broadcasting out from Donegal, if the cameras on this side were to often be, say, for the streaming, you don't really maybe see the support as well. So it was nice. It was coming across. And there's a really good atmosphere, I think, in O'Donnell Park, like, because of its kind of tighter nature. You know, I was just chatting to Carol Keane there. He was on about the games up on Ombeg and Derry, and it's too laid out. It's too, the stand and the way the terracing is, it's just too far from the team. But you seem to get, particularly that stand in O'Donnell Park, there's a real brilliant atmosphere. It was a great day. And as I say, good luck to the winners.
All right, well done. Thanks so much, Brendan Devaney, presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate. That's live just after 7 o'clock. If you're in the Glenties area, why not call into the Thatched Pub or the Thatched Bar? It's just on the corner there, isn't it? From 7 p.m. onwards, just after the news. In fact, great weekend for Niamh Connell, Cairn Donnet, and all the other teams that had success over the weekend, and then heartbreak for those who put so much in. You put so much in, and it's all you want, and there has to be winners and there has to be losers, and that's just the way it is. Greg, I'd be interested to hear from my local minister, Charlie McConnell Logue, who supported Jim Gavin for office of president. Who is he now recommending we, his community people, support? Is he supporting Heather Humphreys? Anyone, I can't speak for Charlie McConnell Logue, or even, I don't know if he's on the record saying this, but I mean, at the end of the day too, there does seem to be a lot of people within Fianna Fáil that are saying that they're not advising other people to back Heather Humphreys, but they themselves are. Greg, do you remember in the late 80s or early 90s, the ad on TV for fire safety was thumbs up on Monday, telling you to put your thumb up and test your fire alarm? I always remembered it. Don't remember it, to be honest with you, but there was a whole host of really quite innovative ads at that time. Get out, stay out, get the fire brigade out, and all these types of things. The council gave us a fire blanket, says a listener. Another, the council supplied a fire blanket to our estate in Stranorlar. So whilst there might not be fire extinguishers, the council, certainly to some of their tenants, have issued fire blankets, which is good to have. And maybe get onto them if you haven't received yours, because there must be a policy there. Ree Baby Loss, beautiful interview with the two ladies. I'll become a granny for the first time in a few weeks, but I'll be lighting a candle on Wednesday night for our wee grandchild, who would have been born this month also. I lost a baby in 1980, did not get to see the baby. It was so cruel back then. Thank God things have changed. Yeah, and I'm so sorry that you went through that. 1980 is a long time ago, but I'm sure those memories and that pain feel still very fresh and real for you. So we're thinking on you as well. And to the other lady lighting a candle on Wednesday. Yep, we're going to do that too. Exactly. Everything's based on export and imports, as this is where the real money is. If people purchased milk and vegetables, etc., from local farmers, then this would impact the importers and exporters' massive profits, but would have a positive impact on the environment. Yeah, the more stuff you can buy that's produced here, obviously, if you're interested in the environment, the better. Another caller says, we are the only species that drink milk as adults. In Venezuela, they have fermented milk, which kills off the lactose. This lady was obviously allergic to lactose, and thank you for that. I suspected it was that, but I didn't know. Do you know what I mean? So I appreciate that. We're the only species that drink milk as adults, but we're humans, really, and we can treat it and what have you. Okay, and I presume animals would get the stuff that they need from different the different sources. Another caller says, hard to believe that a party like Sinn Féin, who are so opposed to banks and bailouts, are now out seeking votes for a woman who assisted the banks evict mortgage holders while her husband was part of the NAMA regime. The problem is and the Law Society of Ireland were out on this, you know, you can't pick and choose who you represent legally. You know, I mean, I suppose you could say, right, I'm packing in the industry, but there is sort of ethical guidelines there. Back to electrical fires. We had the very same thing with the 7-year-old washing machine a month ago. The power tripped. I turned the machine back on and the machine worked away. I stood for a minute watching it, and sure enough, flames came out underneath. Please never, ever leave an appliance on when not in the house. It's not worth it. Actual flames coming from underneath. And you know the scenarios, there could have been another basket with dry clothes sitting there in front of it as well. A newspaper headline. Greg, you read a headline this morning, the first Catholic chaplaincy opens at McGee College. I went there in the 60s and it was called something different then, but there was a chaplain there, so I don't understand the headline. Maybe he was just a visiting chaplain. I don't understand any of it, and that's my ignorance, by the way, so I don't know what to say there. I just read the headline. I didn't read the whole article, to be completely honest with you. A caller says, property tax is effectively water rates, and now they're going to increase this tax and once again get the ball rolling. Who knows where it will end? Yeah, I think lots of people have received letters, if not everyone have received letters, saying that the your properties need re-evaluation. Why can't we have new ballot papers leaving Jim Gavin's name off? them. All the posters should be taken down as well. I know a lot of people who will be voting for Jim Gavin in order to call a new election. How is this fair and all the money wasted? Once the nominations have been locked in, they can't be unlocked. And they did, the powers that be did look at ways in which the ballot papers could be issued without his name. It's not possible. He's on the ballot paper. I only drive certain routes. Most of the Jim Gavin posters I had seen in the past are gone now, but obviously there are still some up somewhere, or else that listener wouldn't have texted in what they did. Right, a number of guests here now to discuss our next issue, and that is the deer population, although we don't really know what that is, but also what efforts are underway to tackle it. I'll go to Michael Keegan first, who is the FRS Co-op Deer Management Programme Manager. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning.
Right, okay. So what
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly, yeah.
Right, okay. So what is being established to, I suppose, look at the deer population?
Well, basically, look, the deer management tender was awarded to FRS there at the start of the year. Look, it's the first effort in the country that there ever has been of a national deer management strategy being put in place. Our role here is to bring structure to what is, up to this point has been pretty structureless. So we'll be starting there by engaging with the people that have identified themselves as having a problem with deer. I'm working with them and trying to form deer management groups across the country in the various different areas that are kind of hotspot areas.
Is there going to be any effort to sort of get a sense of the actual deer population? I wonder how we can effectively manage it if we're not really sure how many deer there are, unless we've since learned since I last looked into this.
Well, look, I mean, on the question of deer, counting deer as such, look, deer counting deer is quite expensive, very expensive, very time consuming, and not very precise. So, we haven't got a number for how many deer there are in the country. Nobody has. And this has been done in the UK for quite a long time, as in 30, 40 years, where they are working with, on a structured deer management. They don't count deer over there.
Okay.
And there are, they do pick sample areas sometimes and do counts, but as a rule, they don't count them for all the reasons that I've just described.
Yeah. So,
what they're focusing on is impact.
Okay. And how do we judge that? But how do we know we're not overculling or underculling?
Well, again, if you come back to the impacts, the impacts will tell you the picture. So if you can monitor the impacts, you can see, are we getting natural regeneration in our forests or are we not? Are the trees being destroyed at a rate faster than they're rejuvenating? So that's where the impacts comes into it.
And
you can monitor impacts very, very pretty easily, and you can see that there's a greater impact in an area or less of an impact. And you can decide, we need to focus our efforts more on this area or less.
And what demographic of deer do you target to best control the population?
Really, you need to be shooting hinds and calves to control the population effectively. Shooting stags has very small effect on deer population overall. One stag will put a hell of a lot of females in calf, whereas you shoot that animal, there's always going to be another stag to pick up the slack to put those animals back in calf again. So shooting hinds and calves is really where you need to be focusing your efforts if you want to control the population effectively.
How long will it take to get workable data in terms of the impact in specific areas, and then how soon after that would the targeted culling begin?
Well, it's ongoing, so data collection will be an ongoing thing, and the targeting, the culling is ongoing. I mean, they're culling away at the moment.
Of course. I'm on about more in a more coordinated way to ensure it's not just stags that are being taken, or when will data driven culling begin?
Well, we're actively doing that at the moment.
Okay.
So we have people that have contacted us that have said they've got a problem. Where our coordinators have gone out and met them. we've looked at the impact on the ground. We've looked at the deer numbers as, you know, as best we can on the ground. And we're trying to focus those people on, you know, in where we have those groups set up, deer management groups set up, that we're trying to focus those guys to work better with their hunters, to be more engaged with their hunters, and, you know, have let the hunters know what they want removed, try and get accurate feedback from hunters as to what has been removed, more accurate feedback than what we've had in the past. So it's an ongoing process. Like, and you have to remember too, we've only had a full team on the ground for the last 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So this is very, very, very much in its infancy.
Yeah,
like,
for sure. That's exactly why I asked that last question, to try and determine when it won't be in its infancy.
It's very much in its infancy. And like, just to put a bit of perspective on this, as I said to you there earlier, they've had structured deer management in the UK for 40 years, and there's still areas over there where they are struggling to keep the population under control because, like, most of these guys that are out there hunting, they all have full-time jobs, they've got a family, you know, they've other commitments. And you take a fellow with a full-time job, really the only time he can shoot, unless he's on a Section 42, is on the weekends, because by the time he gets to work in the morning and comes home in the evening, it's dark when he's leaving and dark when he's coming home. So he's really restricted then to just weekend only. So like, it is tricky, like, to get an increase in numbers being culled when you have that.
Just before I bring in our next guest, the last figures I saw were something around 78,000, 79,000 deers were culled.
69.
I was up until February 23. I thought it was 78,000 in the year up until February 23. Maybe I'm up to correction on that, but anyway. How many?
Well, this year's figures are 69,000.
So there was a reduction. So the most recent figures then are 69,000. Where does that figure need to be?
Well, I couldn't say that there was a reduction now because I haven't seen the previous one. So we're both.
Data released by the National Parks and Wildlife Service to the Irish Deer Commission shows 78,175 wild deer were culled in the 12-month period up to February 28th, 2023. So that's that figure.
Yeah. I haven't looked at the Department of Agriculture or the National Parks and Wildlife website. That would be where I'd be taking my information from, not from some other organisation.
Okay. But if you're the deer management program manager, and I don't mean this in any way ignorant, is that not information you'd need to know as the manager of that program?
Yeah, well, I have the most recent up-to-date ones.
Okay.
That's what I just said. The most recent up-to-date ones, which is... And that is from the department, from the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
Okay, understood.
So what you've quoted there is a figure from somebody, from a third party.
From the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Okay, stay where you are, Mike, if you don't mind. Yeah. Thanks for the clarification. Councillor Jimmy Brogan has been listening with interest, and he's also a member of the Donegal County Council Agriculture Committee. I presume you welcome this, would you call it a new approach? I presume you would, Jimmy.
Yeah, of course. We welcome the deer management program. It's something that's long overdue, I think. You know, the deer have been an issue. Now, deer have only been an issue for a short time in Donegal. I live here in Mancharlis, and I've probably never seen a wild red deer until maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And I thought it was great at the start. It was great to see deer running around. But they become a bit of a nuisance, you know. There's far too many of them. Like, you know, as a councillor, I get calls all the time about deer that have been hit by a car and they're lying on the side of the road and need to be removed. And also from the car owners as well, asking what are we going to do about the deer population and the massive increase in the deer population over the last 10 or 15 years, which is plain to be seen if you're here in South Donegal. And I know the deer probably originated up in Glenveagh, but like here in Mancharlis, we're a long way from Glenveagh Park, you know, but the deer don't care, you know, they're moving out farther and farther all the time, like, you know, and we have massive amounts of deer around here. And now we welcome Michael coming on board there on the deer management, but we just think that, well, I personally think that there should be some sort of account so we can get to grips with the problem. But the first thing we need to do is find out what the problem is. How many deer we're dealing with, you know.
Yeah, but Michael,
I'm no expert, you know, but I think that's the approach we should take, you know.
Yeah, Michael, but you say there's evidence out there that the count, it might not even be accurate and doesn't really add anything to the equation.
That is the evidence from the research we have done, yet that counting really is not as big an issue as people, like, I know, you know, you'd say, you'd look at it and you say, oh, should we need to start with some kind of a figure? But actually, the trying to obtain that information, as I said, it's difficult. Like, you know, you'll end up with a figure. How accurate it is very debatable. So what we're saying is focus on the impacts, and that's what best practice across Europe seems to be, is focus on impacts, not focusing on the numbers as such, because it's just too hard to get an accurate number. And I understand what Councillor Brogan is saying there, but at the same time, when you look at the science behind it, this is the method that seems to be bringing the best results in terms of value for money and everything else.
Councillor Jimmy Brogan's far from Glenveagh, but Councillor Michael McClafferty is somewhat closer. You've raised the issue of deer on a number of occasions, Michael. I presume you're welcoming this new deer management unit, or these new units.
Yeah, I am, Greg, to be fair, very much so. I think it's long overdue, and I welcome what Michael's doing there as in leading the management going forward there. I also respect Jimmy's point as well there, but the counting that. But while I respect Jimmy's point and what he's saying, I have to lean towards Michael's point of view. The impact is more beneficial to all of us, because, as you know, I'm close by Glenveagh here, Greg, as you say, as all of us are here down this neck of the woods. But the reality is we've had dozens and dozens of cars smashed here over the last number of years, particularly a few alone ourselves in the last year or so with deers. Some of those, to be fair, have had very, very close shaves. Well, everybody has that's had a smash, obviously, but there's been one case in particular stands out where a small child was almost seriously hurt. The deers had actually come in the window and just virtually just grazed the child's face as such. Like, this is how serious it gets. And again, what the Parks and Wildlife Service, Greg, nobody's taking responsibility, but yet you can go out to Glenveagh, I can go out to Glenveagh, either the gentleman on Michael or Jimmy can go out and go out past Glenveagh Church, out that direction there in Church Hill. And there's miles upon miles there, or kilometres, miles, wherever you want to look at it, of the fence completely flattened, Greg, broken down, nothing to keep them in. So I'd be leaning towards the way of, first of all, get the call started, get the call done, obviously appropriately and effectively starting, I think, as well, with the good hunters that we have close by us here. They need to be very much involved in this as well, for geographical reasons, safety, one thing another. And like I said, the last day in Lifford, Greg, as well, we need to be focusing as well as Colin, we need to focus as well also on containing. And a huge, if National Parks and Wildlife are serious about this call going forward as a government state agency, it would be a huge start, I think, you know, to put up the fence in Glenveagh again, to at least maintain them, whatever's in Glenveagh, whatever's left, maintain them in Glenveagh, to give us a chance then on the outside, then going forward then.
All right, let's ask Michael that, because it might sound like a good idea, but is the population so spread and breeds in such a fashion that that might not be as big a factor? Michael Keegan, how important is, you know, robust fencing around Glenveagh? It's a lot to ask landowners who maybe don't have their own animals on that land at any given time to start fencing that off. I don't know, how does that fit into this programme, Michael?
Well, I can't speak for the National Parks and Wildlife Service, but what I can tell you is that fencing deer is very, very expensive, and it's questionable as to how effective it is. They will, you know, you put up a deer fence today and it's great and all that, and it, you know, looks brilliant, but doesn't take very long for that to start getting smashed down. You'll have trees falling on it, you'll have animals testing it, and they test it. It's particularly the bigger the area, if you fence in a massive big area and give the deer no option to go through that area, they'll find a way to push through it. They'll go under it, they'll jump over it, they'll actually go straight through it. So fencing smaller areas seems to actually work better, because there's room for the deer to go between the smaller areas in the unfenced pieces. So fencing deer is not the silver bullet either. I think certainly it's going to be part of it, and there will be areas that will have to be fenced. But as regards fencing the entire national park, that's really a question for them to answer, not for me. I can't really answer on their behalf on that one.
No, I get you, and you've answered it well.
You're talking about a huge sum of money as well. The debate then would be, like, you know, do you focus your efforts on you focus the budget, which is going to be tight and all these things, do you focus your budget on reducing the numbers, or do you focus your budget on fencing the deer? Because really, fencing the deer is only focusing on the symptom. It's not the problem.
And there are 13 staff short at Glenveagh as well, too, and it's all coming out of the same pot. Yeah. Michael, did you want to come back
It has to be said, to be fair to the National Parks and Wildlife staff, the guys that are on the ground, in my experience, are usually very, very committed and put in a huge effort, but they are understaffed. That's a fact. They are understaffed. You know,
Michael McCafferty, did you want to come back in there? Sorry, I think you indicated you might.
Yeah, please briefly, Greg. Yeah, in relation to the fence end of it. Look, first of all, the staff that whatever the remaining staff in Glenveagh National Park up there, I know there's 13 short at the moment, but the remaining staff, they're going far beyond the call of duty. Always everything they do up there. But my point of view is here, and Michael's probably not aware of this. I understand there's 40 kilometres of fencing right around the whole perimeter of Glenveagh. A vast majority of that at the minute, Greg, is tumbled down, smashed down, broken down. When that was back in its heyday, if you like, that fence was, I understand, 8-9 foot high in most places. Nothing would get out.
Yeah, but they've got a 100-year plan at Glenveagh to return it to, you know, more of a natural habitat and all that type of stuff. You know, you want to get rid of the deers that are going to hinder that, not fence them in, surely.
Well, Greg, fence them in, first of all, because we don't want handlers either on the road. It's only a matter of time. Like, things keep on going the way they're going. It's only a matter of time to have a very serious road traffic accident. And I hope to God, touch wood here, we don't have a fatality out of it.
And Jimmy, you share that. You share that in the south of the county, as I say. You know, yeah. I've seen red deer run across Clare there, you know, that you just don't know where they're going to appear.
Yeah, the problem is, like Michael said, somebody is probably going to be killed at some stage with a red deer, because they are massive, big animals, you know. And there's a lot of other issues, like, you know, the TB. Obviously, the farmers are worried that deer are spreading TB as well. Like, you know, when they talk about the expense, like, you know, but the expense of the TB testing around the country, and then if a farm can't sell animals for a while, you know, the expense on that farmer then, because they can't sell, we just have to worry out which is the biggest expense and which is the best spent money, like, you know. But I think there's a lot of things the department could be doing. Like, you know, they could be giving some sort of a, you know, subsidy or premium to the hunters, you know, to shoot or to cull the deer, you know. And then if we had a proper count, we could find out where, or some sort of a count, we would know at least where the real problem areas are, you know, and the hunters could concentrate on certain areas, because hunters could be coming here to Mount Charleston, and there might be a couple of deer, and they might go to Glencullen Kill, there might be thousands, you know.
Yeah, but 1,000 deer will have a greater impact than the 6 deer in one space, so presumably. I don't know, I get where you're coming from. Michael Keegan, is there anything, we often get this up, I'm not even sure if this is in your area as such, about the deer themselves, once they have been culled, is the meat of any use? Can it be used, or what's the story? It always comes up, and I don't know the answer, obviously, Michael Keegan, so I'm asking you.
Yeah, look, it's venison is a very good protein source. It's high quality. It's very lean. It's probably underutilized in this country. I would say we don't have a tradition really of eating venison as such in this country. And most of the venison that's shot in this country actually ends up being exported. Mm. We only have 4 game dealers in the Republic at the moment that I'm aware of. Although I was told by somebody that there was a new guy had started up there. I haven't got contact details for him yet, but it's only recent development, I think. So we're looking at 4 really in the country, and we've 1 in the north of Ireland. So, like, it would be nice if we could, like, if I had a wish list, I would love to see a situation in a few years' time where we had, you know, properly developed some kind of a home venison market, and it was seen as a valued product. Yeah. Because, like, at the moment, it's cheaper than beef and lamb, you know.
Well, there you go.
It should be cheaper to buy than beef and lamb, because, like, the price in the game dealer end of it is very little. Okay. From a hunter's point of view, they don't really get enough out of it, and you would imagine that it should be a viable thing. But
yeah,
you know,
okay.
Again, we can't interfere in private business, but we can.
No, Jimmy wanted to come in there. Yep, go ahead, Jimmy.
Just to make a point, it is a very lean and very healthy meat, venison. Like, you know, I've eaten venison myself, and I like venison.
I don't like it.
But, you know, it's, well, listen, everybody's their own taste.
I know that, I'm just saying.
But, you know, it's something that should be used, you know, because the price of beef has gone through the roof and the price of lamb, and, you know, and thankfully the farmers are getting a wee bit more now for it than they used to be, you know, and we have to look at there's a bigger conversation of the price of meat and who's making the most out of it. But,
well, we were talking about that in terms of milk. Michael McClafter, you want to come back in there as well?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Yeah, that's fair enough. And Jimmy makes a good point there about the price of meat and that as well, and the cost of living. But back to Michael's point there again about the venison that as well. Like, as we all know at the Mars, like I highlighted on Friday there as well, Jimmy talked about it as well, and we suppose a number of us did in Lifford. The situation at the Mars with the deers, and indeed the badgers too, and not forget it was Stripey either, because I mentioned him too. The problem is at the minute, particularly where there's a huge impact in deer areas, Greg, is people, farmers with cattle, find themselves now with TB. There is a connection with TB, with badgers, to cattle, and unfortunately that's there as well, and a concern as was raised on Friday as well at the meeting. How do you know if you're eating venison or whatever? How do you know that's safe to eat? There's no test.
Yeah, but if it became a proper, fully regulated... Anyway, Michael's going to answer that one, Michael Keegan. I mean, I presume, like everything, there has to be checks and balances about the quality of any food or meat that's going into the food chain.
There is, yeah. So any hunter bringing game to a game hunting establishment has to... First of all, you have to be a trained hunter. You can't. You're a trained hunter that's trained from a food safety point of view. So there is a course that you have to do in order to sell deer into one of these establishments. It's called the Trained Hunter Course, and that would, you know, in that course it goes through all the different diseases that deer can get and why they get them and how they get them, and also the identification of these diseases, and that has to be flagged. So if you bring an animal to a game dealer, you have to, if you suspect that it has something. Now, bear in mind, these are hunters, not vets. But if you suspect that there's something wrong with that animal, you have to declare that. if the animals then, when they go into the game handling establishment, they are all inspected by veterinary staff in there, so they are inspected. So there is a process there to check whether the animals have are in good health or not.
Okay, Michael Keegan, one last question: are the DMUs already established? Is there a phone line where people can report directly if there's an issue in their area, or how do the wider public feed into this reporting system?
Yeah, well, look, at basically yes, the DMUs are established. There's 15 DMUs have been set up across the country. The way to contact is if you just contact frscoop.ie/deer, that will bring you to a web page and there's contact details there, and you can get in touch with FRS directly, any FRS office directly in your local area. They'll put you in touch then with the local hunter in your area, or sorry, the local coordinator in your area, and he will in turn then, you know, go and start the process, and that'll be like, you know, evaluating what you have in terms of what problem you have and whether you have a hunter or not, or whether he's effective or whatever. And if he's not effective, we can help you with that too. We can get you somebody else,
right, okay,
or whatever. But the first port of call will be the local hunters. So if you've got a farm there and you're affected by deer, if you have a hunter, we'd like to stay working with the hunter that you have. Or if you don't have a hunter, we'll try and get somebody local in, because the local people will know the area a lot better than somebody from...
Okay, Michael, listen, that phone line's fading on us. Thank you very much indeed. Michael Keegan, FRS Co-op's Deer Management Programme Manager. Michael McClafferty, thank you very much indeed. And I know you, as you've referenced a couple of times, we're talking about this in the council chamber, so good to get it out there to the wider public. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks.
All right, take care of yourself. And from beautiful Mount Charles, Councillor Jimmy Brogan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Look after yourself, take care. Okay, any views in relation to that? 086 60 25,000. There's a very important motion coming before the Dáil this week from Deputy Charles Ward, 100% Redress Party, and it's in relation to the handling of the entire defective concrete block crisis. Deputy Ward, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time. Sorry for holding you there.
It's okay. Morning, Greg, and morning to all the listeners.
Right, so this motion... I suppose in it you will outline what you see, will you, as state failures, the broken promises, and the sense of abandonment felt by many in crumbling homes.
Yeah, that's exactly what it will be. It will be basically shouting it from the rooftops in Dalairn tomorrow, or sorry, on Wednesday, and basically getting the message out there that Dublin don't seem to realise that Donegal has a humanitarian crisis going on, and we've been abandoned for the last 14 years, two failed schemes with absolutely no way of moving forward without going into debt. It's unacceptable.
We heard from your party colleague, Ali Farran, a little earlier on, who rightly pointed out, really, and it's you only have to look at it, that despite the odd human interest story here and there, nationally there seems to be this sense that the problem's been fixed. What are you moaning about?
Yeah, this is exactly what's going on. What we've got going on right now, defective concrete is in every single county in Ireland. And now they're starting to waken up to it. But there's an apprehension, particularly from government parties, who now realise too little, too late, that it's coming to their doorstep, it's coming to their constituency office, and they're coming to me for advice. What's going on.
You talked about the schemes being failed. Is the second scheme a failed scheme? Can it be saved, you know, if we get the new science and we start, you know, offering options based on that science and maybe even try and widen the financial scope to, you know, to help more families be able to, you know, rebuild their homes without having to go to the bank or their savings if they're lucky enough? Like, can this current scheme, in your view, be saved?
Right now, the way it sits, no. If we have a review of IS 465 and it comes back with recommendations where we cannot have, and under no circumstances can we have, remediation options where there's defective materials left behind, unacceptable. If that's the case, then these people will be revisiting these homes again. If it's defective, then it has to go all the way down to the foundations. That's the only way we can make this scheme work. Right now, we have a number of people who have had remediation options with materials left behind who are deeply regretting what they've done, because at the time, it was about getting on with it and trying to get on with their lives. When they're in this situation now, they're looking and they're going, I'm going to have to revisit this again. We have a history of outer leaf remediation failing, but the government don't take into consideration science. It's real simple. All you need to do is follow the science, and the science tells the truth, and the government are blind to that currently at the moment.
Yeah, and even those that, you know, are waiting for the speed to be expanded to accommodate them better, there are so many people who are in limbo. You know, people in council houses, for an example, you know, many others. There are so many different categories of people who... maybe their voices are being lost a little bit, but they're going through this every single day with no hope, no scheme.
Yeah. Look, Greg, it's like this. If you're in a social house or it's a private house that you built yourself, it's like this. You have the same rights. Everybody is equal and there should be no difference. But the fact of the matter is, we have people who have been in social housing, who've had that house, let's say an SI house on their land for 20 plus years, that house is affected. They were maybe trying in the future to buy that house. Right now, they're in limbo. There's no scheme in place. We can't see it coming. We don't know what it looks like, but we keep on hearing it's definitely on the way. Now, what it looks like, why can't we see this? Because it's like everything else, it's the government and the lack of will. They have to waken up to what's coming down the line here.
Have you ever, or have you been able to use in your position, I know the answer to this, as an elected rep, you know, it's a very important role, been able to get any answers from the housing agency yourself? And I'm thinking even something that should be simple to answer, such as those downgraded homeowners, for an example, you know, the lack of respect or communication is shocking. Surely they can't ignore an elected TD in sort of giving answers to delays.
Well, Greg, I'll give you an example. We've had NSAI in, and basically NSAI around the table, and they're the standard that we're meant to be going on. And basically when they came in to us, I had to basically ask them, who here has experience of construction? Came down to the three people that were in the room. There was only one. That's who I dealt with. I'm not dealing with anybody that's not got their head in the game. I'm not going to waste my time. And that's the way it is. You have to be direct. Now, I've met with the Housing Authority. I've met with a number of other groupings. But there's a difference between meeting all these groupings and the government. The government take advice from all these people. Now, the people in the room aren't going to be taking it seriously after this. They're going to have to take it seriously because we're not going to stop. This is only the beginning. this is only the beginning of what should be a pathway to a proper scheme.
Yeah, and it's the understanding of the problem. I mean, I know you're close and often sit beside Catherine Connolly, for an example, who has heard you speak, is acutely aware of the words, how they describe what's going on here. And even she never got the full impact of the problem until she recently went into one of these houses. And I think that's the problem. I think, and that's someone who's very sympathetic to your way of thinking, yep. Right? So it only makes you wonder what the rest of the 167-odd TDs really think is going on up here.
Greg, Catherine came to my house when we were canvassing. I took her around my house and she broke down. And she basically said that she couldn't believe I was living in conditions like this. But tens of thousands of people are every single day. And it's not just me. There's people that are worse off and are being ignored. And I'm not going to let this happen. I'm determined to fight.
Do you know the funny thing is though, and you can do your bit, but depending on what time of the day your motion's being moved, there could be five people in there in the door. Do you know?
There could be five people in there, Greg. Yeah.
I mean, that's a housing crisis affecting tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, but you see, there you go. You're right. But guess what? This is meant to be the biggest scheme in Ireland, a €2 billion scheme. And we'll soon see how serious we're going to take this. There's a thing in the government, a lack of will. Well, I'll tell you what, I will show them what will is all about.
Right, we'll watch on with interest. There'll be plenty of coverage of that, obviously. It's very, very significant in this whole process. Thanks for your time this morning, Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party. And we'll keep an eye out as to how many are moved to attend that. Certainly from Donegal, you'd imagine it would be the full five, so to speak. Listen, thanks so much for listening today. Have a wonderful day, will you? Thank you again for watching, if you chose to watch. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, have a great day.